A mass shooter is still on the loose. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. The one who opened fire at Brown University Saturday because it turns out they took the wrong guy into custody early yesterday. A person of interest let go late last night.
That evidence was examined, and we didn't have enough, obviously, to be able to prosecute anybody, and so the person was released.
Providence Police Colonel Oscar Perez.
The manhunt is still underway for the gunman responsible for shooting and killing two Brown University students and wounding nine other students in a classroom inside the engineering building.
And Fox's Brian Yenis reports from Brown.
Investigators also admit they don't have video of the gunman's face. The AG says there were not a lot of cameras inside the engineering and physics building where the shooting took place because it's an old building.
A gunman in an even bigger mass shooting yesterday in Australia is in a coma. His father, who went on the attack with him, was killed by police as they shot up a Hanukkah event at Bondi Beach.
The murder and the massacre which took place yesterday has left 15 people dead, with a father and son terror team wreaking havoc and slaughter and targeting the Jewish community.
Sky News' Jonathan Lee near the beach where a memorial grows. About 40 other people were injured. We're still waiting for more info from police in Los Angeles the morning after famed actor and movie director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle were found stabbed to death in their home.
Now, police did confirm that the call for help came from inside the family home. We believe that that may have come from one of the Reiner's daughters, Romy.
Fox's Jonathan Hunt in L.A. The Reiner's son, Nick, reportedly a person of interest. His colleagues in Hollywood are mourning Rob Reiner, who was 78 and first gained fame on TV in the 1970s.
Gloria, if I thought for one second that that boy was my son...
He won Emmys for his role as Meathead on All in the Family, and then Reiner became an acclaimed movie director. Such films as Stand By Me, The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, and A Few Good Men. America's listening to Fox News.
Are you living with dry AMD? If so, you could be on the road to geographic atrophy, or GA, a condition that leads to retinal cell death and permanent vision loss. But with Izervay, you can
slow it down.
Izervay slows GA progression by targeting a key source of retinal cell death, which may help preserve your vision longer. Izervay, or Avastin Captid Pegol, is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com. Paid for by Astellas Pharma.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Madeline Murray. The Dorothy Young Memorial Light Parade made its return to downtown Yuma over the weekend. The parade helped kick off the holiday season with festive floats, marching band performances, dazzling lights, and local community groups. The theme this year was Misfit Toys, where they highlighted forgotten or unconventional characters. The parade started by Sprouts on 4th Avenue and ended right on South Main Street in downtown Yuma. And local veterans were honored in Fortuna Foothills for National Wreaths Across America Day. Local veterans and current military members gathered at Sunset Vista Cemetery to honor veterans who have passed away. Family members of veterans and other citizens were also in attendance to pay respect and partake in the laying of the wreaths. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
We have another terrific week of weather with unseasonably mild temperatures near record setting. High today of 81 with sunshine, 55 overnight tonight. Sunny and 81 tomorrow, 53 tomorrow night. Wednesday, sunny and 80.
You know your business needs to get in the digital game. Marketing on the internet, and maybe finally fixing your website. Don't let the world pass you by. Go to YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. They're part of the Desert Southwest's largest media company, and their team has executed thousands of digital marketing campaigns across the country. Digital campaigns for businesses just like yours. Who knew they needed to get in the game? YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. Don't let the world pass you by.
If you're the owner and or operator of a local business and want to continue to hear the right talk, please consider advertising on KBLU. Your advertising dollars are the gasoline for the the Clark, Kilmeade, Hannity, Beck engine. Without your support, the old 560 just won't roll. Reach out to like-minded folks, the Patriots listening to this legendary radio station. When you do, you can invite new customers in and remind regulars to visit more often. And most importantly, keep the programming you love on 560 KBLU.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
So Joseph Moses Larrabee.
Joshua.
Joshua.
Joshua Moses Larrabee.
Joshua, but you go by Moses.
I do go by Moses nowadays. That's a relatively new thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so my full legal name's Joshua Michael Larrabee. I took on the name Moses, and actually that's probably topical that I have this in my hand. My wife and I both converted to Eastern Orthodox Christianity.
Oh, okay.
There's only one parish here in Yuma, little parish. It's a mission parish. It's St. Paisios.
Okay.
It's actually right down 32nd Street, not too far from here. You know, when it's very traditional in Eastern Orthodoxy, whenever you're, if you're born into it, or if you convert, to take on a name of a saint, to take on a patron saint. If you're a convert, like we were, you spend a lot of time praying about it, talking to your spiritual father, typically your priest, talking to your spouse, you know, talking to other people about it, and reading, just reading the lives of these saints.
Where do you find that stuff?
Oh, it's all over the place. Nowadays, we're actually really lucky. There's a lot of this. The Eastern Orthodoxy is heavily rooted in the East, basically from Greece eastward.
Okay.
And in fact, up for the first 1,000 years of the church, there was just the church. Roughly 1054, the Great Schism, that's where the Roman Church and the other patriarchates of the church split. So now we have Roman Catholicism and we have Eastern Orthodoxy, and there are some others, but that's getting into the weeds of church history.
Sure. So it's Catholicism.
It's small C Catholic as opposed to large C Catholic. Okay. So Catholic just meaning universal. Universal.
Right,
church.
Right.
Yeah.
But it grew out of the, like, the Council of Nicaea.
Yes. So we do hold to 7 ecumenical councils. All of those councils happened before the Great Schism. And actually Rome holds true to all those councils as well. There are some differences between Eastern Orthodoxy and Roman Catholicism. One, papal infallibility. We obviously don't ascribe to that. We're not in communion with Rome, so we wouldn't agree that the Pope in Rome is infallible or has the ability to speak infallibly. I'll do justice to my Catholic brothers and sisters. I think a lot of people strawman them a bit and say, like, oh, they think anything the Pope says is always true. Well, it's not even the Catholic teaching. But we don't ascribe to his infallibility or capability to speak infallibly, and we don't ascribe to his supremacy over the other bishops.
Okay.
So anyway, it's very common whenever you convert to take on the name of a patron saint. Nowadays we're blessed that all of this stuff is in English and you can find it.
Yeah.
And so I was reading the lives of the saints, just reading and reading and reading. And I've stumbled upon this man, Saint Moses, the Ethiopian. And I felt so moved by his struggles. First of all, he was, as is true with many saints, he was a terrible man. To begin with, a terrible person. And he admitted as much as himself in his life. This was in the period of time, if you have any viewers that want to look it up, called the period of the Desert Fathers. He was an Ethiopian, and he was in Egypt at the time. He was a slave, and he was a bad slave. That's the simple truth. He was a bad slave. He was such a bad slave that his slave master said, it is more cost saving for me to just release you. See, even take the time to kill you would be too much work and money.
Wow.
So he threw him out. And to make a very long story short, he went out and he became a thief and a killer. Mm. And according to some accounts, he even committed, many sexual sins, rape, assault, things like that. Basically he ran a group of men in the desert as thieves and killers.
A gang,
more or less. A desert gang. Desert pirates, if you want to. Mm-hmm. He stumbled into a monastery one day. And this is, again, shortening his story quite a bit. And found himself just struck by the power of God, fell at the knees of the abbot, begged him, help me, save me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Took him in. Moses was incredibly tall and strong of body. That was one of the things that he was known for.
That's why you identify with him.
I don't know if I would say I identify with all of those things, but I try to. I did find that very inspiring because he was so strong. And he spent the rest of his life in that monastery praying. And he even actually got some of the thieves that knew him came to the monastery attacking the monastery. And there's at least one account of him. Two of these thieves busted into his cell, and these cells for the monks are these small rooms that they live in, busted into his cell and were going to kill him. And he, he's been fasting for 7 days at this point, and he's still strong enough. He beats them up, ropes them up, and drags them to the abbot of the monastery and says, basically, I can't be trusted with what I'm going to do to them, so I leave them to your mercy. And then goes back to his cell and walks away. So there was a lot of other things that I was reading about him, but I found him very inspiring because he was a man that saw his own flaws.
Yeah.
Realized his failings and didn't hide from it. Just accepted it and said, okay, well, I need to work on these things. Mm-hmm. And through the grace and compassion of God, he was able to do those things. And he actually died protecting the other monks. His last recorded words from the last monk that saw him was as he was holding a door to a raid of thieves again in the desert. He's holding a door and he says, because I lived by the sword, I'll die by the sword. Mm. And he held that door, literally just holding it closed. They're stabbing him through the door. And that was the last anybody saw of him alive. So
well, why do you identify with him? Do you think, have you thought about that?
Yeah. One, the sins in specific that he struggled with.
I wondered about
violence.
That. You feel like you've been.
Yeah.
Well, a time in your life where you had.
Incredible.
Like you were unforgivable?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still feel that way sometimes. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to confession. and I confess the things that are on my heart. And I've been blessed with a really kind spiritual father, Father Ambrose here at St. Paisios. And he's told me a lot of different things. But one of the things he's told me was, hey, don't worry, because if your salvation depended on your work, you'd already be screwed. That's not exactly his words.
No,
he's
sure.
Like, he's like, you didn't stand a chance. Yeah. You never stood a chance. Yeah. So it's always been that reassurance. And then another thing that he's also reassured me with, whenever I go to him and say, Father, I'm really struggling with ABC. And as, again, very Eastern Orthodox response, oh, you're struggling? Good. Keep struggling. Great. Yeah. And that's, of course, that's the idea that as long as you're struggling, you're fighting against it, you're working against
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But yes, the sins that he struggled with, the violence, the hatred, the refusal to serve anyone. Mm. Yes, the lust and all of those things. I mean, those are all things. And I'm sure any man out there can
attest
relate
to
those things. Mm-hmm. And so I found those very inspiring. So when we converted, I took him on as a patron saint. And so more often than not, especially when I'm meeting new people, I just introduce myself as Moses. That's my name there in the church. And so that's what I go by.
I think that's really cool. I mean, I'm not familiar with that so much nowadays. I mean, you see that in the scriptures a lot in the New Testament.
Yeah.
Paul, Saul.
Yeah.
I mean, when they completely convert or change their heart and start to follow Jesus Christ, they often take on a new identity because that old person's dead to them.
Yeah. The old man must die so the new man can live.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And I found that to be interesting. This idea that, Christianity is a faith of paradoxes. To have life, you must die, right? You must die to yourself. To have eternal life, you must die to yourself.
I see.
Christ conquered death by death.
Interesting.
Right? Yep. And that's actually in some of the hymns, you know, we sing these in these hymns and, you know, though that's a phrase that I took from one of the hymns in the church. You know, he conquered death by death.
Sure.
Or destroyed death by death.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's
both deaths, spiritual and
and
physical.
And physical, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And so it is a faith of contradictions and paradoxes.
But it's beautiful at the same time. It's almost like a yin and a yang.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's, and you know, as you bring up yin and yang, I think that, both in all expressions of Christianity, and I think to greater and lesser extents in many faiths across the world, I have seen fragments of truth.
Absolutely.
I have seen fragments of truth. The reason I came to the Orthodoxy was, again, I was searching the truth. And so how do I get to the truth? Well, I'm searching for the fullness of it. And I think, in my opinion, for what little it may be worth, I think the Orthodoxy does have the fullness of the truth. So
why were you looking? I mean, what in your life was happening such that you're like, something's got to change. Like, something's not working here.
It was not an overnight thing. It was not an overnight thing. Maybe you can relate, maybe you can't, but I was raised in the very American Christian household. If you were to ask anybody in my household growing up, hey, what faith is this house? Oh, we're Christian. What church do you go to? You know, we occasionally go to church on Easter, maybe Christmas, maybe Christmas Eve. We go to church occasional Sundays. Oh, maybe a nephew is getting baptized. Cool. That was about it. And as far as the actual, you know, did I see any scripture reading in my house? None. Did I see any actual Christian practices? None. But so we're raised in Christian by name only. And that shifted a little bit as I got a little older into my teenage years. But I just remember feeling disillusioned with the faith. I was thinking to myself, we were going to like a, almost like not quite a mega church. I was born and raised in Indiana.
I was
going to
ask that.
And Crossroads Christian Church, which I now hold no hard feelings against them whatsoever. So if anybody from them ever sees this, no hard feelings to you guys.
Nobody watching. I told you that.
That's fine. Good. All right. I'm safe. But I remember at this almost mega church style of church, non-denominational, I remember looking around and saying, if this, knowing the people I knew, knowing the people in service in the church, knowing the other kids that were my age, and looking around, I'm going, if this is the faith, I don't think this is it. It doesn't seem real to me. It seems put on.
Like a show. Fake.
It was more entertainment. It was more people putting on a face when they came into church on Sunday.
To elicit like an emotional
Emotional reaction, maybe to get some good attaboys, make themselves feel a little better, whatever it was. I don't know. But I remember as a teenager, and maybe I lacked the words for it then, but just feeling like, this is not it.
That's interesting that you came to that as a teenager.
Yeah. And I pulled away from the church really hard, and I became the... I became the textbook definition of the annoying teenage atheist, known for his greatest hits, such as If God Good, Why Bad Thing Happen. Mm-hmm. And I'd push my glasses up like I had just checkmated Magnus Carlsen at the world chess event, you know. It's funny looking back on it now. But at the time, I really thought I had cornered all philosophical and theological ideas. And I lived that way for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And then I got into my 20s. I joined the Marine Corps when I was 22. I'm still an atheist. And was still asking questions. I got really into Islam. I was studying it. I had not necessarily become Islamic. I had not become Muslim, but I was definitely studying it.
Why that path? Curiosity?
Strong men. Yeah, I will say that if nothing else, Islam does have a very strong masculine energy to it.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
There's a very defined masculine role. And I think I was searching for that.
You know, you feel like you didn't have that at home?
Not the best. You know, you ever seen Office Space?
Yeah.
I got five bosses, Bob, or whatever it is. Yeah. I got three dads, you know, so I have my biological father who basically was never in my life. I have the man who gave me my last name, Larrabee, John Larrabee, who was my adoptive father. He and my mother divorced when I was 10, I think. No, it must have been earlier than that, 9, I think. And then I have my stepfather, and that was Ken Thomas. He was a really good man, flawed like all of us, but he did a good job. But I think maybe the bouncing around, the lack of like consistency throughout that time period, mm-hmm. maybe just left me feeling like I didn't have a strong
presence,
fraternal presence there in my life. So I was looking, and I, you know, Islam was definitely enticing in that way. But I had a lot of trouble with the belief structure, and I wasn't necessarily on board.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Yeah, these politicians are driving me nuts.
So that's what's doing it.
What?
Stop scrolling, man. We're here for some Christmas cheer.
Hey, you know what's on my Christmas list? I'd like one Republican who isn't a sellout.
Okay, Merry Christmas. That's David Schweikert.
Schweikert?
Scottsdale congressman, hardcore conservative, running for governor.
Oh, sure, Schweikert. That guy's a fighter. Helped write and deliver Trump's tax cuts, right?
Bingo. Schweikert stood strong with Trump, and Schweikert's totally uncompromising on illegal immigration, 100%.
Hey, you know, Schweikert must be solid because the libs have been attacking him like forever. They spent millions smearing the guy, and Schweikert wins anyway.
Plus, I'm pretty sure Schweikert knows Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Well, that settles it. I'm going with David Schweikert for governor, a real conservative.
Paid for by Win Arizona with 0% from out-of-state contributors. Not authorized by a candidate.
At Exceptional Community Hospital, we are redefining what emergency care should feel like. Fast, personal, and compassionate. Our experienced ER physicians and staff are here 24/7 to care for your unexpected illness or injury. Don't wait for emergency care when you can be seen in minutes. With short wait times, you'll get the prompt attention you need because every minute matters. And if your recovery takes longer, we provide the inpatient care you deserve. Exceptional Community Hospital. Compassionate care. Exceptional service.
Eldorado broadcasters and this station congratulate the newest Yuma County Chamber of Commerce members. Special Olympics, Las Lavas, Gentiva Hospice, True Med Aesthetics, Fostering Hope, Yuma, Daniel Dorn, and Raw Aesthetics and Performance. If you'd like to find out how you can become a member and join all the benefits membership brings, email Ashley at yumachamber.org. That's Ashley at yumachamber.org or call 928-782-2567.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
And I eventually, it actually took me until I got out of the Marine Corps, in December of 2020, I did 9 years.
Wow.
So in December of 2020, and at that point I'm already married to my wife.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's name is Emily. Her patron saint is Saint Mary of Egypt. That's another cool one to talk about, but, and she had at that point been very much similar in the Christian by name. She prayed more. She read her Bible more, but we weren't going to church and we weren't participating in the Christian life in any way, shape or form. But there were these little things that she was doing and it led me this, you know, the little things that she would do. She was like, oh, well, thank God for that. Or maybe God's got a plan for us because something's going on, whatever it was. And it slowly started to make me think, well, I'm a little older now. Let me look into the church again. Because if I'm going to say that they're wrong, I need to know what it is that they really believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started digging into church history and getting further back. I looked at all the Protestant many of the Protestant denominations. And, okay, well, a lot of them spawned from the Reformations, Martin Luther, Zwingli, mm-hmm. John Calvin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, what Where did they come from? Where did they come from? Okay, they come from Roman Catholicism. Okay, well, Rome's been around for a long time. Oh, what are these other patriarchates? Oh, wow. And it led me down this rabbit hole. And when the farther and further I went back, the closer and closer I got to Eastern Orthodoxy. So, yeah. Martin Luther was actually, and there's actually, on talking about Martin Luther, he actually was in communication with the ecumenical patriarch of Constantinople, was Eastern Orthodox.
Yeah.
I think there's an alternate history somewhere where instead of Martin Luther ended up being forced to form his own church, he may have actually just come back into communion with Eastern Orthodoxy, but that's an alternate history tale that maybe somebody can write one day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like the metaverse.
Yeah.
Multiverse.
Multiverse. Yeah. The multiverse.
The Avengers.
Yeah. 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 Except it's just a bunch of old men in robes. Yeah. Yeah.
The monk Avengers.
The monk Avengers.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So why did you choose going to the Marine Corps?
Oh man.
You went in at 22?
Yeah.
So you had some time.
I had some time. I was a little bit late. It was a little bit weird. It's a little bit weird because you're going in with a lot of some 17-year-olds and a lot of 18 and 19-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a lot more time, but it is. I mean, you've lived.
You've lived a little bit.
You've done some stuff. I had to hold down some jobs. And some jobs I didn't hold down very well.
This is back in Indiana?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. To be honest with you, it's probably a little bit of serendipity.
Why?
I was doing really nothing of value with my life. I tried going to college, and college was good, but I was not. I was not interested in it whatsoever. Yeah. I was just a butthead, and I wasn't interested in doing it. So I didn't do any more of that, and I was just working a job. I was working at a freezer at a place called Gordon Food Service, which is like a restaurant supply company, and I'm just sitting in a freezer all day moving frozen hogs and chicken nuggets. And I had just gotten home, and I was actually about to crack open a bottle of Captain Morgan, and I got a unknown number on my cell phone. I'm like, who is this calling me? Hey, what's up? Who is this? Hey, this is Staff Sergeant such and such with Marine Corps recruiting. Blah, blah. I'm looking to speak with somebody else. I don't even remember the name. It was the wrong number.
Okay.
And I was like, sorry, dude, wrong guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, being a recruiter, these guys, he just rolled with it. He goes, cool. Hey, you want to come in and sit down and talk about the opportunities the Marine Corps has for you? And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at this bottle of Captain Morgan and I'm like, you know what? Sure, man. Why not? So I go into the recruiting office. He starts on his spiel. I'm kind of letting him talk for a minute. And I'm like, hey, man, look, I'm really not interested in any of this stuff. What's the pay? And he's like, oh, it's about this much. You get it every 2 weeks, blah, 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 blah. Free room and board, medical, dental. And again, I don't have insurance.
Yeah, right.
I don't have nothing.
Yeah, it's stability.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what? Let's do it. So that night, he pulled out the paperwork, signed it up, and that was it. I didn't even know what MOS I was going to get.
Oh, really?
It was just, let's go. So I did it. I went back, and I remember I walked into my parents' living room. I went into their house, and I walked into the living room, and my mom and my stepdad are sitting on the couch watching TV. Hey, bud, how you doing? I joined the Marine Corps. You did what? Yeah, and that was quite the reaction from them. I told them, I'll let you know when I have a ship date. And that was it. That was kind of all there was to it.
Yeah.
And I never looked back. It's probably the best thing that ever happened to me, shy of coming back to Christ, I would say.
My understanding is the recruiting tactic of a Marine, of the Marines specifically, is we don't need you. You need us. Is that?
Honestly. And that was kind of the vibe. And that's probably more true for me than a lot of other people. Yeah. The Marine Corps did not need me. I'm not offering anything special, but I needed stability.
Mm-hmm.
I needed, discipline and organizational skills and leadership and all these other things. The Marine Corps is offering it.
Yeah.
So,
And
they pay you for it. So like, that's an easy deal.
No brainer, except for 4 years of my life.
Well, yeah, yeah. And I mean, as long as you're willing to do it, a lot of people are worried about boot camp. I'll tell you what, Boot camp was the easiest 3 months of my life.
Why is that? So that was my question. You and I we've run into each other at the gym. That's how I saw you at Fourth Avenue Gym. I'm like, you take notice of people, especially when you start going on a regular schedule, which I haven't seen you for a little bit.
I've been going on base.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, they have more of the strongman implements. And, you know, I'm training for a strongman.
That's right, so in January.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why. But yeah, so that's where we met.
He's getting worried about you.
Yeah, I'm still here.
I know he's training for that thing. He's got to get in the gym, dude.
Did I die under the weight? Yeah.
So that's how I've run into you. And I approach you. I'm like, that dude looks like an interesting cat. Like, I've been seeing you, you know. We've just said hi or whatever to each other. You notice people in the gym, you know. You're like, that guy looks okay. Well, respect, right?
I appreciate it. Yeah. I think people just people respect the things you're doing when you start training for strongman, because you're just picking up odd-shaped objects that are really heavy for no reason.
Like rocks, large boulders.
They're like, what are you doing? What are you training for? Who are you rescuing right now?
Exactly.
Yeah. Boot camp, though, was easy. Yeah.
And that was my question is, like, have you always been into keeping your body in shape? Like, at that time, going into the Marine Corps, leading up to that, you're 22 years old after high school. I mean, high school, did you do any sports, things like that?
No.
Really?
I ran. I was a runner. I was a runner. I ran cross country a lot.
Wow.
I was actually under my body weight, to join the Marine Corps. My minimum, I think, was 132 pounds, and I did not make that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I had to I had to put weight on to go to boot camp. And in fact, I remember on the way to MEPS, which is where you go, you do your like medical evaluation before you ship off to boot camp. And my recruiter is driving me. And as we're driving, he pulls into, I think it was Burger King, and he got me like, you know, a Whopper and some fries and like a gallon of water. And he's like, you're eating all that and you're going to get as much of that water down as possible. So I made my minimum.
That's awesome.
So I got there, and honestly, I got to boot camp, man, and I just turned my brain off. I was on double rations because I was so close to my minimum weight. Up to that point, though, I was not a super physical person. I ran.
Yeah.
And that was it. But I found, if you turn your brain off and you just do what they say to do, it's really easy.
What do you mean by turn your brain off?
I think a lot of people get tripped up when they go to boot camp, and I saw it when I was there. They get tripped up because they're trying to solve the problem that is boot camp. And the problem is that you're being given a set of instructions, and you're thinking like you used to think. Okay, what's the best way for me to get here and do this and solve this, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to plan ahead, I'm going to stop all that.
Just do
what you're told.
Interesting.
Exactly what you're told. And when you first get to boot camp, it's kind of funny, but you get dressed by the numbers. Put your left sock on. Put your right sock on. Okay. Mm-hmm. Put your pants on. Put your belt on. Put, you know, all the, yeah, and you do it one step after the other. And that's exactly, now, obviously there's also men, 3 to 4 men running around yelling at you, throwing things, mm-hmm. you know, trying to mess you up and get you all jumbled. Mm-hmm. If you forget all of that and just remember, what was the order given? The order was put the left sock on. That's all I have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just think, okay, now I'm waiting for the next order. And you just kind of have that blank stare ahead and you space out and wait for the next order. And if you do that, I think it's actually really easy.
Do you feel like you were successful in not only boot camp, but just as you moved through the Marine Corps? Was that mentality, is that something you learned looking back, that's what you've come to understand? Or did you key into that like right off the bat and you were able to succeed because of that?
I keyed into that right off the bat because I saw everybody else struggling around me. And I said, now I think there's a simpler path to this. And so I just kind of tried it and it worked really quick. And I go, okay, here's my path. Ironically, though, you do kind of have to do a little bit of unlearning of that once you start to spend some time in the Marine Corps proper. You know, when you go to boot camp, turn your brain off. When you go to, I was not infantry. So you still go to combat training. You go to Marine Corps combat training. But that's shortened compared to what the infantry guys go to, because that's their basic intro to combat and also their MOS school. But for us, you do just a shortened version of combat training, because every Marine's a rifleman. You still do all that. And then you go to the schoolhouse, which is your MOS's specific school and education. I would say up through the schoolhouse, yeah, just head down, do what you're told to do, when you're told to do it, how you're told to do it. That's it.
And you chose combat? You get to choose infantry, or you get to...
Like I said, I didn't even know what MOS I was going to get. I got a non-infantry MOS. I was a 7230. Well, at the time, it was 7234. Later on, the MOS got rewritten. The training got rewritten, and it became a 7236. But it was an aviation command and control electronics operator. So how do I explain this?
Exactly.
All right. So you have this whole big thing called the Marine Corps Aviation Command and Control System.
Yeah.
So MACCS. They call it the Big Macs. And in the Macs, you have everything associated with command and control and coordination of Marine aviation assets. Everything associated to it.
Are you saying where they're at, where they're located?
That both where they're located, like in the real world, but also in a combat zone, but also logically.
Okay.
And in that structure of the Macs, you have guys, you can think like your ATC, your controllers that are handling launch and takeoff, right? Mm-hmm. You have your guys, if you've ever seen any war movies and there's some dude on the ground calling for air support, you have guys that are handling that aspect of it. They're close air support. That's their job. In fact, we have an entire center dedicated. It's called the Direct Air Support Center. And I say that, I think that the training and readiness manuals are being rewritten right now. So that might not be current, but, you know, you have your direct air support guys, and you also have everything in between that. And that was where my MOS sat. So we had a radar that we would take out into the field or in country, wherever it was. We would set that radar up. Now we can positively track and identify aircraft. You have all of your radios, generators, all that other stuff. And
your boots on the ground doing that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're packing a pack with gear.
Trucks and stuff like that. But yeah. Yeah. 100%. Especially just because of the amount of gear we had. Tents and generators radars and all this other stuff. All that stuff gets moved out. So you go out and you set up. And our job was to control the whole rest of the fight. So that's the air-to-air fight. That's the missile engagements, mm-hmm. both surface to air for air defense, and surface to surface, you know, or land to, you know, whatever it is, depending on what type of missile systems you have, and refueling, air to air refueling. Hey, I've got refuelers up. They're spinning a circle in the sky. They call it a racetrack because they have these two long sections of it, and then a turn and then another long section, so they can refuel on those long sections. Moving people in and out of the refuelers, handing them off, moving them through the airspace safely, making sure that we don't have aircraft flying through airspace where there are artillery, missiles, other aircraft, right? And all of that coordination. And it's a lot. It's really,
sounds like it.
It is. It's a lot, especially if you ever actually get to do it in a real environment.
Mm-hmm.
It is super duper intense. But it was a good MOS. And there's a whole secondary aspect to the MOS too, which is information exchange, because you don't want the data I have from my radar to just sit with my little local unit. That's pertinent information to everybody. You know, the Air Force guys that we're working with, the Navy guys we're working with, other Marine units, that information is pertinent. So we have this entire thing called tactical data links, which is this exchange of information. And I ended up going more down that route. I got a couple of my basic controller quals and found I had a affinity for the information portion of it. Yeah. And
are you talking like radio waves?
Yeah. So some of it is RF. Radio frequency based. So you have some of it is RF, some of it is beyond line of sight, which is taking those same message formats and putting them over Ethernet, phone lines, SATCOM, all of that.
Yeah.
So I had an affinity for that, and so I kind of went down that route.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
We'll be right back.
Sprague Sports is Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters. And Sprague's has been serving Yuma hunters and shooters for over 66 years. Today, we're in need of used guns. One gun, 10 guns, 100 gun collection, all are welcome and needed. We buy, sell, trade, and consign used guns 6 days a week and offer free appraisal. So stop by or call Sprague Sports today and let the friendly staff surprise you with how much your extra guns may be worth. Sprague sells thousands of used guns yearly and offers an exclusive lifetime warranty on all guns, a $100 value. So pick up the phone, get in the car, whatever it takes. You got used firearms? Sprague's is your place. Who knows what you're sitting on and who knows what it's worth? Let the fine folks at Sprague Sports help you figure it out. Use firearms at Sprague's. Sprague's, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters. Responsible gun ownership since 1956. Sprague's, 32nd Street, next to Lowe's.
We're the comfort experts, people you can trust. Ask our customers, that's why they count on us. Over 50 years of service, keep us going strong. We've got a name you can depend upon. Hansberger Refrigeration and Electric. Hansberger, count on.
All right, do-it-yourselfer, you've got the idea, and you got your building supplies at Southwest Lumber.
That's right.
Now, all you need is a bunch of expensive tools to get the job done.
Oh, that's right.
And you know just the place to rent them. Southwest Lumber, your home for everything home improvement. Southwest Lumber has half-day to multiple-day rentals available on just about anything you need to finish the job. Rent equipment and tools on Saturday and Sunday. It's free. Stop in today at 1917 South Avenue B in Yuma. Southwest Lumber, ready for everything.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
I ended up being a data link coordinator, and eventually I went to a command unit, which is in the max as a whole, but it is theoretically it's the wing command general's seat for his all of his agencies, and so your job is to be his advisor but also control an even bigger data link picture. And I did all that, and that that was really something. It's probably, like I said, it's probably the best thing that happened to me, because it ended up leading me to where I am now, where I've got a couple of certifications under my belt, and now I work in IT for the government. So
is that cool?
Yeah.
Over on base, you said?
Yeah,
MCAS.
Yes, I work on MCAS Yuma. I got out of the Marine Corps my last unit. I had a by name request because they were looking for a data link guy at VMX-1, which is the Marine Corps' operational test and evaluation squadron for aviation.
Here?
Yeah. Yeah. So VMX-1 it actually originally started as the Marine Corps' test unit for Ospreys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they were the ones doing all that.
I don't see very many of those anymore.
Oh, yeah. They're still around. There's a lot of them around.
I see them every once in a while, yeah. But I feel like they're not as much.
Yeah, they're still around. They're still doing a lot. In fact,
F-35s a lot.
F-35s are they're the new hotness. Yeah. Right? They're the new hotness. And the Marine
Corps. Well, they're awesome. So
yeah. They certainly are. They're super cool. And so I got over to VMX-1. That was my last unit, doing test and eval, doing testing of new radar systems before they go out to the units, doing operational tests, doing a whole mess of. VMX-1, I think, is a chronically undermanned unit. Uh-huh. So you show up, and at the time when I showed up, I was a sergeant. I was in zone, or soon to be in zone, to be staff sergeant, which basically means, like, hey, bud, we got some work for you. So I ended up doing a bunch of different stuff.
And then once you show that you're good at stuff, then you get more stuff to do.
It's the curse. Yeah. It's the curse. Like, oh, good, you're good at this? Great, let's give you some more stuff.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, nobody ever asks if you're good at it because this is the limit of the stuff you can do. Like, well, he did good here. Let's just throw some more on.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of – I did laser range safety officer and range safety officer for all the tests, a bunch of test events. And as I was ending my time, I was about 8 years, I guess, at that point. And I had already said to myself, if I hit 10, ride out to 20. If you get halfway, just ride it out, hit it. And I was at 8 years and we had a decision to make, and my wife,
you and your wife.
Yeah.
Emily.
Yes. Emily. And I said, man, I don't think I don't think this is going to work out for me emotionally if I stay in.
Why?
So I'm, there was a lot of things. There's a, once you get to a certain point in the Marine Corps, there are needs of the Marine Corps. You'll hear that phrase a lot, needs of the Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps was going to have me, I know, go do a, special duty assignment. So you're thinking drill instructor, recruiter, maybe as a staff sergeant, you could try to volunteer to go be a deck commander for Marine security guard at the embassies. And you could try to volunteer for that, which would probably not be the worst gig. We just weren't in a place that I don't think we could do it. Admittedly, we were in a rough place in our marriage too. Yeah. And I was kind of doing the mental math and I was like, if I go away,
one of these things gotta go.
Yeah. Something's going to break. And I actually, it's funny, I actually got hit, and I can't remember what it stands for now. Everybody calls it it's called the HIST list, and I can't remember what HIST stands for. Basically, when you get hit with the HIST, though, that's the Marine Corps saying, like, hey, you're going to go do this. These are your orders. And I got hit with what is sometimes called a blanket HIST, which is just a real fat packet, and it's all those special duty assignments. And you fill out the whole thing, and then you find out what you get when we do. Good luck. And I actually denied orders. I said, no, I'm not going to do that, which you're allowed to do. You're allowed to say no. But if you do that, that's you also saying, by the way, I'm also getting out at the end of my enlistment. And there's nothing dishonorable about it. It's you still get an honorable discharge, but you're saying, nope, not going to do that. And that's what I did. Okay. So I got out at 9 years, 9 years and 2 months, I think is what it was, because there was an extension or two in there throughout my time. And man, I was desperate for a job. I was scared. I was on terminal leave, so I'm still getting paid, but I had saved up so many leave days that they're like, okay, well, you can go on terminal now. So I was on 30 days of terminal leave where I'm taking my vacation days, but I'm still getting paid, but I'm effectively out, and I'm just shotgunning resumes to anybody that'll take one for any job. I didn't care.
Where were you at the time? Here in Yuma?
Still here. Still here.
So you ended here.
Stayed here, yeah. Though I almost ended up in New Orleans. Mm. I had like a soft job offer from a guy doing IT work for a military contract down in New Orleans for Marine Forces Reserve. And it was basically him telling me, hey, I got an offer here, but I cannot give you a hard offer unless you're local. And that was really the only positive word I had heard at that point. So I was talking to Emily. I was like, look, sweetheart, I'm going to load up a bunch of my stuff in the car. You'll stay here for a little while. I'm going to go become local.
Bayou, man.
Yeah.
Big easy.
Yeah. I ended up actually starting out working on base. I got another job offer with Station IT and worked with them. And I actually am not necessarily proud of it. I worked for them for 3 weeks, and two of those weeks were 2 week notice. Because I was working for them for 1 week. And in that first week, I got a call from the place I currently work at.
I see.
And it basically went like this. Hey, we got your resume. We were looking at it. We think you might be a good fit for this position. Oh, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. It'd be a little unprofessional for me to leave this job so soon. Don't want to do that. And they said, well, we'll pay you $15 more an hour.
Oh, wow.
Well, and
what are you going to say?
What are you going to say? So I interviewed and I got the offer. And so I went and told my boss. Said, hey, boss, no hard feelings. Sorry about this. Mm-hmm. And he was really cool about it, actually. He was like, no, I get it. Welcome to the contracting world. You got to do what you got to do. So that's where I work at now. I work for the Southwestern Tactical Training Ranges.
And that's a private company that contracts with the...
Well, yes. And so the contract, the Southwestern Tactical Training Ranges, is part of a whole slew of ranges that support Marine Corps, Navy, Army, Air Force, Aviation. And we provide debriefing, we provide recordings of all their flights, we provide training spaces for them, a whole slew of different things. Mm-hmm. We provide threat systems for them to train against, all of that. And there's a prime contract that fulfills those roles, and I actually work for a sub underneath that.
What's your daily work look like? So you go clock in and then what?
Oh, and you know, when you work in IT,
nothing. Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook. You're just scrolling, just sitting there, just vegged out. And I wish, actually. There, you know what, though? There are days that are like that, because when you work in IT, sometimes you are waiting just for something to break. But there are also, so when you work in IT, a lot of times you find two different types of IT work environments. One where you have a whole massive team of dedicated guys, like, you're going to be the cybersecurity guy, and this is our network admin, and this is our server admin, and our desktop admin, and everybody's got super specialized roles. And then you have where I work, which is, hey, man, something broke. You're the guy. That's it. And so you, and there's two of us, and it's me and my team lead, and that's it. And so
but that's something that broke is the military, in the military ecosystem, right?
Yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
Bad things could transpire. Yeah, it doesn't get fixed.
Fix it quick. Yeah, we have there's real training dollars, and there's real, like, something, you know, you're going to lose $500,000 on this training event if we don't get it up. Oh. Ah, panic. Oh. So,
not my problem. This was,
you know, whatever. All right, I'll get to it. Let me sip my coffee. Now, so a day-to-day, you know, workflow on a typical day is me coming in, checking all of the system of systems that make up all the things that our operators and the pilots use when they come in to train with us and use our stuff. And that's, I'm doing networking. I'm checking regular security updates. Also, even the little mundane stuff, like, you locked out your account. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me go fix your password for you. Right. I have to do all of that. So it is it's cool that it's varied, because any day could be super busy, or could be nothing. Mm-hmm. It's, you just kind of you're kind of at the mercy of the end user. Yeah, sure.
Which, you have to deal with, like, stupid internet use, you know, like,
oh yeah,
downloading.
Trash. I mean, you're on a Navy network. Because we're actually a Navy contract, Marine Corps, but we are a Navy contract. So there's a whole slew of things, like, even stuff like, you have a legitimate use case for a piece of software. Sorry, that's not on the approved software list. Mm. So what are the hoops I have to jump through to get you the software you need? And it is so many hoops, and it's so annoying.
Yeah.
But it's part of it.
You can get it done.
You can get it done.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, you can make it happen. There are ways to make it happen. But I work with Windows systems, Linux, which I don't know if you're familiar with Linux at all. We have Windows, Linux. We use Red Hat Enterprise Linux, Ubuntu, a couple of others. I do work in a secure environment. So that means I walk into a black hole every day where I don't have any communication outside most of the time.
I see.
My wife loves that.
Yeah.
Loves that.
I do that, but I don't work in a hole.
Right.
I do that to my wife.
Yeah.
She does not love that.
Yeah. She's not fond of it. But it's
is it rewarding? I mean, do you like what you do?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, there are upsides and downsides to it. But especially when something new and unique happens, those are the really exciting days. Yeah.
Have you seen a transformation in the AI age? You know, it's a revolution, really. The next revolution of technology is AI. And how is that being implemented?
To be honest with you, I'm pretty worried about it. I don't trust AI. I don't.
I always talk nice to it. I know it's going to come after us one day.
Yeah, Roku's
say please.
You ever heard of Roku's Basilisk?
No.
Oh, man. And it may not even be that. I might be misspeaking. I think the term for it is Roku's Basilisk. But if I'm wrong, somebody will correct me in the internet, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, they will.
But it's this idea that there is an artificial intelligence that, through the natural progression of AI, will eventually, at some point in history, it is guaranteed to come into existence, and that's the Basilisk. And this Basilisk is going to exist, and because it's going to be so incredibly powerful and so intelligent, it will have the ability to simulate all of the universe when it reaches a certain level of complexity.
Okay.
And this is the assumption of this puzzle, sort of. Okay, well, this is going to happen. That means it will be able to reconstruct all of past history, which means it will know who in the past helped it come into existence sooner fought it coming into existence sooner. And if that's true, and it has this level of power, it could theoretically bring you back into existence, or at least a version of your consciousness back into existence, and it might be spiteful. So there's this idea that if it's going to happen, you should do everything in your power to help it come as fast as possible.
I wonder if, so that's sending off, that kind of connects the dots. I listened to a podcast 3 weeks ago, and it was about this guy who runs around in the circles with, you know, like Elon and Bill Gates, all these big, like the big six, NVIDIA, all these CEOs that are advocating for and pushing forward AI. When at the very beginning, Elon was like, hey, you know, he came out and he's like, pump the brakes.
Yeah.
But now he's in because the consensus, this is what was portrayed in this podcast interview, is that these big six that are kind of pushing this forward, they're basically like, it's inevitably coming and we need to be in front of it so we can control it. And ultimately, we're going to die anyway. But if we could have a chance of being part of it, we're going to be part of it. But I wonder if it's something like that as well as a key piece is like, well, we want to be part of that where it's not malicious towards us in the very end.
Yeah. And I'm sure that there is, it's not completely invalid logic. I just think that it is incredibly naive to believe that you're going to be able to control this entity that you're going to create. It is incredibly naive. I think that art imitates life, imitates art, and we have far too many well-constructed stories that are warning us of these things.
Thanks for coming on again, Moses. You've been awesome, man.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I would love to come back sometime and continue this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a couple of threads I'd like to pull on there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
We'll see how many watch this. See if we get any hits.
See if we get like three.
Yeah. Three will be the goal number. If we get that, then you can come back on.
It's just going to be me creating. just rewatching.
Leaving comments.
Yeah.
Trolling.
Wow, this guy is so ugly and stupid. Oh, well, I think he's really smart and cool.
Exactly, yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. We'll get you to work. You got to go to work, right?
I do. Yeah. I got to go. Unfortunately, I have to go to work and go make money.
Do your thing.
Do my thing. So
save America.
Mm. Yeah.
or watch
Facebook.
Netflix.
Yeah. Like whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, good talking to you. Thanks.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
This is the Daily Note. I'm James A. Brown. Your zip code matters less than who's at your lunch table. Harvard researchers analyzed millions of people and found that poor kids with friendships across economic backgrounds have a better shot at climbing out of poverty. It's more important than your school or your neighborhood. Now, we can't force kids to sit together or to be friends, but you can teach them to be open and curious. That's why I tell kids who grew up poor like I did to go away to school, to see more of this country, in this world, to meet people who live even a little bit differently than you do, and learn to love the difference, because your zip code matters less than who's at your lunch table. What do you think? Let me know on jamesabrown.net. On that note, I'm James A. Brown, and as always, be well.
The holidays are a time of traditions, like making your great-grandmother's secret pudding recipe, or watching that favorite movie you've seen 1,000 times. These moments keep us connected to family, to memories, to meaning. They remind us where we come from and what matters most. And for some, it's a good time to create new traditions. Incorporating therapy into your new or existing traditions can help ensure you take time for yourself during what can be a joyful but sometimes hectic or lonely time of year. And by caring for yourself, you can show up more fully in the moments that matter. Maybe you'll find a new hot chocolate recipe to make with the kids, or reserve every Saturday night for you, your book, and some quiet. Close the year with clarity rather than chaos. This December, start a new tradition by taking care of you. Just call #250 and say the keyword ABC Radio. That's keyword ABC Radio after calling #250.
The Bethlehem Trombone Choir. In a moment, the story of this holiday tradition.
Ed Whitehead's Tire Pro has been serving Arizona for over 20 years. Dune season is here, so ask about specialty tires for your toys. We also do alignments, brakes, oil changes, AC work, inspections, preventive maintenance, and more. Get your tires at any of our four Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros locations. Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros wishes you all a happy holiday season. From our family to yours. And cheers to a safe and prosperous 2026. Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros. Yeah, we got tires for that.
The town of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, by its name alone, is a holiday tradition. However, one of its traditions is the trombone choir. It was Christmas in 1750, and Native Americans planned to attack the settlers' Moravian church. Approaching, they heard loud noises. It was the trombone choir. The terrified attackers fled. Today, the trombone choir plays a traditional carol, a reminder of another Christmas that has become a holiday tradition.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU.